You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey now, welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show. I'm so sad we had to cut off poor Joel. It was a great call talking about his dad as a bombardier.
He had a lot of insight and a lot of takes. And we've got to, I agree with Joel, when people were experiencing the draft in Vietnam, it was a tough one to go. One, it's a country they don't understand. It's a country they didn't know. They had no idea why we were there. They had seen Korea. You know, World War I, the entire nation knew people that were serving.
Yeah.
And World War II, same thing. You couldn't go anywhere without knowing folks were doing it. And we, at the time, were taking parts of our community that historically did not work and different contribute. You know, you think about the number of women who, at that point, did not make up a large part of the workforce, were drafted in to running and building the planes,
Rosie the Riveter was, that's a real deal.
All of that changed our society significantly. But the fact of the matter was the nation was behind the war. Similar in Korea, but to a lesser extent. And by the time Vietnam rolled around, we weren't at all. And then the way we treated folks coming back was horrible. I do believe that there are still a lot of folks out here that want to serve and want to support the country. And I think we've gotten some of the patriotism, and I know it should never be blind patriotism. I'm not trying to tell anybody.
So, but the thing is, the K-12 system puts a big damper on patriotism.
Because it goes back to those two words that bill number one,
yep,
history and civics. We don't understand our responsibilities, and we really are losing more and more of what the history of our country was about.
Oh, once in a while, it's used as an opportunity by a teacher to teach that America is not so great. And that's the problem.
I'm okay with us taking a look at our mistakes from the past. We don't want to repeat them. We could always take it. We need to take a clear cut at our current government and elected officials.
Yeah.
Routinely. We can't, we hold them accountable. This truly.
I've heard that.
Yeah, that's what we're supposed to do.
Matt Neely, you're gonna.
I got a nice call during the break from Doris and reminded us to watch All Quiet on the Western Front. She said her father was in World War I, which is just amazing. So she talked about how that movie was very meaningful to her about just how bad war is, and so she asked that we think about that as well.
And I appreciate folks calling in with stuff to in movies, especially. I'm going to watch The Girl Who Wore Freedom.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing. Last night I listened to Ronald Reagan's 40th anniversary.
Yeah, Billy number two was telling me about this morning.
And to your point, you know, he does talk about the impact of faith in our ability to do that job. Because
yeah,
there was a lot of faith and trust put into it.
Sure.
And the weather broke, and there's a lot of things that you point to that worked out to our advantage. So I do encourage people to look at those documentaries, or even if they're loosely held documentaries, are always a great
way. So in the end, great stories are the things that last, right? Those are the stories connect with people.
Yeah.
And so when there's a great book, even the one that Suzanne was talking about, she says it's 750 pages. Well, that's 1% of the population can read a 750-page book.
That's
right. So you have to do it through good documentaries, good movies that hopefully present mostly accurate representation of what went on.
Absolutely, and then keep those as a historical base and make it obvious which ones do and which ones don't. I think that conversation, what we're missing on World War II is, yes, all the veterans that serve, the numbers are dwindling, but also the people that support it. I mean, you go over to the cemeteries in France,
yep,
all along the coastline, they're immaculate. And the people who were there, like the call for the girl who wore freedom, the people that were there when it happened, love our country for what we did.
Yep.
When I was an exchange officer flying in the Belgian Air Force, this was back in the 90s, we had, he was called the godfather of the squadron, and he was invited out for all of our family parties that they'd have on the base. And I was the only American. Everyone else was Belgian. I was lucky enough to learn to speak Dutch before I went over there. And so it was a great 2 years of my life. But every time he'd be at a party, after a few beers, because the Belgians like their beers, he'd eventually find me. And he would tell me, because he served and was a POW in World War II.
Oh, wow.
And tell me his appreciation for what the Americans did.
That's awesome.
But then he'd tell me, we're going to fight them again. And when we do, I want to join you, because I've got my concerns still. Now, obviously, he could never get past how he was treated.
Yep.
And the idea that a country which had done it once would do it again, you know, and we've got to understand that whether it's the citizens of that country, which I generally don't think it is, but it's the leaders of that country, and we have to hold them accountable. And we were just talking, Chris, off there about, you know, the decision not to go to Baghdad after the first Gulf War. Well, that's because we allowed a leader who had proven he was not to be trusted, and he had other ulterior motives. We allowed him to continue to serve. I'm okay with countries elect their own leaders. And even in countries that they don't have elections, or the elections are all false, the citizens have the first shot to change what's going on in that country. But at some point, once they start impacting other countries, it's time to do what's right. We as a country can't go into an isolationist mode. This world now is too connected.
Amen. So. A couple of things before we go to break, and then we got a bunch of calls we got to get to. From Barbara, she said, if you want a different perspective on World War II, make a visit to the Australian War Memorial in Canberra. We arrived just after they opened at 10, and before we knew it, it was 4 p.m. and taps were being played as the museum was closing. Matt, how's this investigation? Are you good? Did we find the culprit?
I've learned, don't ever fire Matt Neely up, because if he's focused on something, it's going to happen.
He's like that guy chasing the guy who stole the bread in Les Miserables. That's what I like about it. That is how good the museum is. My kid was 10 at the time, and it made such an impression on them that they're currently serving in the Air Force 20 years after the visit to the World War II War Memorial in Australia. So I thought that was...
That's outstanding.
Bev loves today's playlist. And then what else do we got? Getting a lot of good reactions, and I love the phone calls. This is from the Cousineaux. Good to hear. Wake Up Tucson will be supporting the Honor Flight program. Ken and I met with Pat from Channel 9 Tuesday, did some promo for this vital program. We were honored to go in November, this last November. It was an amazing, memorable experience. And I know that Matt experienced this when he went with his dad on the same flight.
If you've never been out, and you don't... For those folks who want to understand how significant the Honor Flight is to the veterans, and we're at the point now that we're starting, Korean War veterans are getting on the planes, even Vietnam veterans. Again, that community that was never truly welcomed back to our country and thanked for what they did.
Yeah, it's making a big impact. And
all you have to do is go out to either a send-off or a welcome home. You just go down to TIA when they're doing it. And the amount of support, the Freedom Riders are there with the flags, the people. But to see the joy and the look on the face, and if you're there for the return home, see the joy on their face and the impact it's had on their escorts.
Absolutely. All right, we got to go to break. 8:16 in the morning, Ted Maxwell, Chris DeSimone. It's like a murderer's row of callers. Rick, Bunker, Gary from Bisbee, Umpire John.
And let's bring them all on, because if that we keep calls the rest of the 30 minutes I'm going to be with you, we will not have to talk about anything political.
We're running out the clock, as they say. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. All right, we got to get right to the calls. Ted Maxwell, Chris DeSimone, and you. We're doing up we could do a whole show on D-Day, which is just fine. That RTA crap can wait till another day. It's okay.
Yes, sir.
Much important. All right, Matt, who do we got? Who do you give me order of
Rick.
Because all the lines are packed now.
Good job, everybody.
Rick, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey.
General, how you doing, sir?
Doing good, Rick. How you doing today?
I'm well. You know, one thing that when we join the service, many people around the world join the military. Other countries, they say you're going to join the military. We joined the service, number one. And number two, I think if people really wanted to get an understanding of the values that were implemented by the military, even during peacetime, because they used to tell us we have to work harder during peacetime to preserve our freedoms than because the other people already knew what they had to do. And if you ever have an opportunity, go out to the VA and you will see men and women who understood the word service. And I think when you said that earlier, I thought that was so on point, because it is an honor to serve. And I think we're in a society, we take so much for granted that we forget the little things that got us where we are today. So
Amen.
God bless our fellow veterans and those men and women that serve so diligently. World War II, World War I, you look at today's military and these men and women, they're fighting for the same freedoms that those folks did. And we need to remember that each and every day.
Amen. Great Thank call, you. Rick. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, Rick.
790-20 funny. Let's go. Funny. Wow. 2040. I'm funny. Let's go to Bunker on line 3. Bunker, you're on Chris and Ted. Good morning, buddy.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, this is a great show. I love the topic. I'm a pre-war baby, so I have vague memories of that time and period. But one of the things I'd like to mention is there's a couple of documentaries that came out right after the war. Two of the greatest documentaries ever. They were actually series, but it was Victory at Sea and the Big Red One. And those things should be brought back, because they showed what it was like. They gave you a feeling of that time, and if we need to get back to that. My grandmother, Bessie George, my family had moved out to California just before the war, and my grandmother served as a night watchman down at the docks. You know, this is a little old Texas lady. She was down there doing her thing. My cousin Wally Manning was lost at sea, submariner, missing in action, the last submarine sunk after the war. Those times and those memories mean a lot to me, and they mean a lot to America, but they have to have the memories. And just one last parting thought is, you know, I joined the Navy because when I got out of high school, I had been indoctrinated to the idea that I had a military obligation. I knew I wasn't going to college, and I said, you know, I have to do this before I do anything else, because I'm not mature enough really to do anything else.
Gotcha.
And I'll leave you gentlemen with that.
Bunker, great phone call as always, my friend.
Thank you, guys. Great program. Keep it up. Oh, and the 14th is Flag Day, so get your flags out.
Yes, sir. 790-2040. Let's go to Gary in Bisbee. Gary, what's shaking?
Hey, good morning, fellas. One thing I wanted to remind people, a lot of the patriot men, hard workers in Bisbee who wanted to go fight the war were not allowed to, because the Army needed bullets, and bullets are made of copper and zinc to equal brass, and that's what makes the bullets. So the mine played a big part in World War II, because if we hadn't had this mine, they said that we probably could not have won major parts of the battles. So we contributed our part on mining the copper.
I love it. That's a great...
And Gary, I want to jump in on that sure. one and join you with that thought. The majority of the minerals we now get that goes into everything from, the making steel, constructing all of our technologies, everything we got, we no longer mine those here in the U.S. We have them, but we don't mine as much of them. And we've got to, at some point with the society, have a realistic conversation on the importance of mining in our national security, not just our economic security. We forget that. And you're right. The role of industry in our ability in World War II to do what we did, especially if you look on the air side of it, where planes were going down routinely, and yet they were being delivered day after day after day. We could not have done what we did if it wasn't for the folks that were here working in industry and the mines to make sure that we had that capability.
Matter if you told those people those days, 80, 70, 90 years later, we're selling U.S. steel to the Japanese. Imagine if you told them. this is really happening. They're like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah, and sometimes we forget, you know, we went into an isolationist mode after World War One, and there's some benefit that came to us as a country because of that. But we had to come together as a country and have an industrial base that allowed us to do what we did.
Gary, that's a great phone call. I got to get to a bunch more before it's over, so I appreciate it, sir.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Later, Gary. 790. No one lives in Tucson that listens to this show. Let's go to umpire John in Flagstaff. John, what's shaking, buddy?
Hey, I'm driving up the canyon. Hopefully, I'll keep the cell phone going. My dad was drafted in the Korean War time frame, but he served only in Anniston, Alabama. And my two grandfathers were in the First World War. One was up at Fort Drum, but my mother's father went over there with five of his brothers and came back with four. The oldest was killed a week before the armistice. But my question is for Ted. I keep hearing about homeless vets and drug addicted vets, and I'm wondering, how do the numbers compare to the general population? I remember a book on Vietnam by James Dunnigan, Quick and Dirty Guide to War, the second one, that he said it was the Hollywood script writers, he was a Vietnam vet and he's addled, but he said there's less of that in the veteran population as compared to the general population. So I'm wondering where the numbers are.
You know, that's a great call, umpire John, and I'm going to tell you, I don't know. Now, my sense for working with some of the folks in that community is that it's not as high as I think we'd make it out to be, but the fact of the matter is we have a lot of veterans who are homeless and are not getting the support they need. Now, we've got a lot of veterans organizations, and a lot of it's vets helping vets that are out there trying to help those folks. But PTSD is a real thing. You know, we talk a lot about the serious mental illness that leads to homelessness. Well, PTSD can feed into that as well. And opportunity in taking care of our vets. And those who served, and we forget, and you know, for the last two decades, there's been a large portion of this that we had folks on the ground facing hostile fire. And we've got to make sure that we take care of when we get back. And we lose them in the homeless world. Making Action, or the MAPE Project, which Chris has had on the show before, does a good job of recognizing and finding veterans who have dropped off the map and then trying to repatriate
them
post-death. So.
I hear music.
You're a professional on this show.
We're not playing music, John. It's just in your head. You're going crazy finally. No, I'm just kidding.
Again.
Have a safe flight tonight.
Bye-bye.
Later, buddy. He's flying his otter over the Grand Canyon. Yeah. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. All right, 8:34 in the morning. We're doing an all D-Day show, which is just fine with me. 790.
It's nice. I just closed my laptop and can put all the proposition information away.
We'll do it another day. We'll do it another day.
Appreciate the calls. It looks like we've got another one lined up as well.
Absolutely. Let's bring Rick on the line. Rick, you're on with Ted and Chris. What's up, buddy?
Hi. My uncle was not at D-Day. He went a little bit after. He was very young. I believe he was about 18. He fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He was shot. He was wounded in the foot, and he actually lost part of his foot and had to, for the rest of his life, he had a prosthesis there so he could walk. He was captured. He spent the last 3 months of the war in a, in a prisoner of war camp. And when he came home, he went to medical school and he became a gynecologist. And I never asked him, but I'm pretty sure that he could tell you what a woman was or the difference between a man and a woman.
Thank you.
But he was a great guy, and he was the nicest guy. And I used to know the exact number, but he delivered over 5,000 babies. And he made a big contribution. He got married. He had four children. One of his sons became a doctor. One of my cousins, his daughter, became a nurse. He was just a great guy, and I think he made a great contribution. When he was in the prisoner of war camp, because he was unable to walk because of his wound, he was in a middle bunk, and in the middle of the night, the prisoner of war camp was attached to some type of factory. The factory was bombed. A bomb hit the barracks. It knocked out the big cross beam in the bay that they were in, the barracks. The cross beam collapsed, and it killed the prisoner of war on top of him and the prisoner of war below him. And he was trapped there for like 12 hours.
Wow.
And he survived.
That's a blessing, Rick. Just curiosity, did he openly talk about his time in the war? Is this some of this stuff you found later or heard? Because a lot of times we don't capture our family members' stories because they don't want to share that or burden the family with it. So I'm curious if he was willing to talk about it with you.
Yeah, he did, and this was in the 90s. So yep. He was... Yep. So he was kind of at the end of his career as a medical doctor or towards the end of it. And he also gave me, he was also very interested in the German soldier. And he actually told me a story about killing the German soldier in the Battle of Bulge. He was on guard duty and a German soldier in white camouflage was trying to sneak up. And that German soldier had a garrote when they checked the body. And he saw some movement. And fired one shot, and they found the body later in the morning. And he was fascinated by the Germans. He said, you know, the Germans were very tough opponents. And he ended up giving me a big box of books on World War II, and that started me down a course where I've got a couple bedrooms full of books on World War II, and I've studied and studied and studied it. But yeah, so he talked about it, and he had some bad experiences. Being a prisoner of war was not easy, and especially at that time, because at the end of the war in 1944, at the beginning of 1945, Germany had very little resources. And so you think about food and medical supplies, and even though they would receive Red Cross packages, you know, it was a very difficult time for Germany as far as supplies. And so that the at the bottom of the list when you're going to receive stuff would be prisoners of war. So
I'm grateful he did share that with you, though. There's a lot of veterans don't. It's sometimes tough. The irony of it, there's a program out there called the Veteran Heritage Project, which Ironwood Ridge, I think University, a couple other schools in this district now have it as well. It's expanding, where they interview veterans as the high school students interview their veterans and then write basically a one-page or two-page synopsis of their career, their stories. And there's so many families that when they're with their dad or their mom and hearing their stories read by these high school students come up afterwards and go, Dad never spoke of that.
Yeah.
And it's so important for us to hear it. You know, sometimes that's the torment. Chris just looked up the numbers and to the question that Umpire John was asking about the number of veterans percentage wise is double what the citizens are in the homeless population.
It's a little bit more than double. It's 14 per 100,000 for citizens and 31.7 per 100,000 for veterans.
And Rick, I'm glad he shared his service with you, and thank you for sharing that with us today.
Yeah, he was a very positive person, so I think that might have helped as far as his attitude. And he was just a great guy, and I think that, you know, and I know that he suffered a lot through it, but he came back, and he turned that into a positive. I mean, he got the GI Bill, and he went to medical school.
So absolutely.
He turned a bad experience into a good experience because he had a good life. He had a prosperous practice, and he was a jokester. When he came to Tucson to visit, because my mother and my aunt both lived out here, and my grandparents were here, they would go down to Nogales, I remember, take him down to Nogales, my parents and my aunt and uncle, and he would buy, back then you could buy a Rolex watch for something like $5 or $10, a fake Rolex, and then he would take it back and give it, he would buy several of them, and then give them to other doctors and act like it was a real Rolex. And of course, the thing lasts about a week or 2 weeks before it would break, but he thought it was pretty, you know, he kind of thought that was kind of a funny joke.
I love it. Rick, thanks for sharing that with us. I got to get to a couple more calls, but thank you for a great call.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, my friend. 790-2040. Let's go to Tia Gloria on line 4. Gloria, you're on with Chris and Ted. What's up?
Good morning.
Hello.
I remember being a little girl about 60 miles from the border in Chihuahua. And there was a gentleman who would ride a bike with the one and only transistor radio in the whole village. And he had fought in World War II and came back with a metal plate in his head. So he had really bad dreams and such. We thought they were dreams. I don't know. But he would tell you, I had to go to the war to help the neighbors. And that's los vecinos and I guess other Mexican men who were not Mexican America had come to help the neighbors. And every time I remember that, my heart just swells, you know.
Sure.
At the border, my parents had a general store type thing with gifts, and they sold 50-pound sacks of flour and sugar. And Americans would come across because there was a shortage here and buy the flour and sugar. But more importantly, they had leather shoes and leather belts and purses, you know, those carved ones.
Yeah.
And there was a shortage here. And since they'd get a railroad car full, the word would go out in the counties around New Mexico, and they'd be sold out in a matter of days. But it was, they said, Dad said, you could sell them for twice as much this fall. And he said, we're helping the neighbors.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. I think, you know, when it comes down to it, we should think of each other and thank all the people who participated and who gave their lives.
Amen to you, Gloria. Great phone call, my friend.
Bye.
Later, babe. Margot, of course, this is right. She's loving this entire show. But she said, honor these heroes of D-Day by supporting your local World War II vets. They're here. Go to the 390th Memorial Museum at the Pima Air Space and listen to the stories of Colonel Richard Bouchong, 101 years old, B-17 pilot. He's still there every Thursday.
And that is the amazing part of it. I mean, these folks are, majority of them are now centurions. They've been around, and they still can reflect and remember their stories.
Yeah, it's,
we won't be able to hear them for long.
I got to crawl through that bomber at the 390th.
Yeah.
And when you see how small and cramped it is, and those guys that are on the belly gun.
Yeah, the belly. Could you see being in the belly turret? I mean, it was literally the you know, death ball in some ways, because if you took shrapnel at all, it more than likely was going to jam and you're going to be stuck in it.
Yeah, just unbelievable. Let's get to Michelle before we go to break. Michelle, you're on with Chris and Ted. What's up?
Hi, guys. Hey. I just, and you kind of touched on this, but Ted's question to one of the previous callers about, did his uncle talk about it? My father was in World War II. And was in the Pacific Theater and would hardly ever say anything to the family about it. I mean, every once in a while he'd pull out some old relics and things, but he would often have trouble sleeping. And my mother, years later, would say that when he woke up in the morning, when he had a bad night, he'd say, and this isn't a pejorative, he would say, I was fighting the Japanese all night long. And as a kid, I had no idea. So, and I don't have many regrets in my life, but one is that if you have that veteran in your life that has never been to the World War II memorial in Washington, D.C., or Korean War, or even Vietnam, and it would help you to facilitate that journey, please do that, because I lost time with my dad. And so, anyway, do that for the veteran in your life. And thanks for this discussion. It's been great.
Michelle, thanks for the beautiful call.
Michelle, that was right. Incredibly well said, too. And it's tough, because a lot of times they don't share for a lot of reasons. And I don't want anybody to take the idea that if you've got a veteran, especially an older veteran, to push them hard on the issues. But when you're going to see the motions is what you just said. The impact of a veteran's visit to any of the memorials is just incredible. That's when the memories and the emotions and the sharing come back.
Yeah.
Michelle.
All right, thanks, guys.
Have a great day. One last email. Gary Davidson, 8th Air Force. Ted mentioned the Precision Day light bombing of Germany during World War II. That was the job of the 8th Air Force based in Great Britain. That unit, out of 115,000 personnel, suffered 47,000 casualties, including 26,000 deaths. Precision was not cheap.
Amen. And that's the Masters of the Air. If you haven't seen it, it follows the 8th and the, I think it was the 370th specifically, and tells a lot of the stories. Obviously, a lot of the things you'd leave what's up for, storytelling and what's for interpretation. But it was pretty blatant. And the biggest criticism I've heard about it is some people say they don't want to watch it because they know the outcome, because the outcome's not good.
Yep.
I mean, the number of crews that made it to 20. So you think about it, the number of crews that made it to 20 were extremely small,
yep.
Which meant every other crew knew their day was coming.
Crazy. Last email. This is from our longtime listener, Bob, U.S. Air Force 59 to 63. I was born in 36. He goes, thanks for playing the playlist today. He goes, I started kindergarten the September before Pearl Harbor. Have so many deep-seated memories of news and music from pre-war war radio. It always amazed me how hearing a song from my preschool days can evoke a strong emotion, since I don't really remember much before kindergarten. If I had submitted a playlist, I would have included several you plays today. Thank you. And that's Bob, U.S. Air Force Captain, 59 to 63.
Thank you, Cam. Bob, appreciate your service.
So, all right, Ted, I know you got to go and sit on an amazing, fun call.
Well, the Arizona State Transportation Board's having a study session today, so I've got to go log in and do that and take it to en route to get back in front of the computer. But I truly appreciate what you're doing for Honor Flight.
Yep.
It's an incredible program. If you have any interest in the Veterans Heritage Project, I tell people to reach out and take a look at that. All those stories are now ingrained in the Library of Congress.
Yep.
And for all those who have served or have family members who served, just I appreciate you all taking the time today to think about them, what they did for our country, and the importance of service. Rick summed it up. It is service. It's not military work, it's service, and that we forget that sometimes.
All right, Ted, we did no local politics today, and that's probably a blessing.
It was. I'm sure we'll have plenty of time to get into some of those conversations later.
All right. Have a great day. Have a great week.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate you.
Tom Moulton's coming up at the top of the hour with Jump in Tucson. He has the father of the Chicken King, Arnie Jacobson from Lucky Wishbone. And then he's going to reveal to you the secrets of a dark tourism secretive organization called Skull, which I've been to a couple of their windings in the past. They're a good group of guys and girls. So that's coming up on Jump in Tucson. Hello there. Welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. BBG, of course, this is right up his alley. I'm preparing my interview with Alex Kershaw. I checked the American Warrior Radio Archives. So many World War II vets that I've had on the show are now passed away. Record their stories! Exclamation point. Let me close this door. Hold on. So noisy out there. So noisy. Let's put a bow on this. Matt's here. Hi, Matt. God bless you. God bless you. This kind of show that we just did here with taking basically, we just talked about D-Day for an hour and a half. This is why we do what we do. Yes, it's very important to get all that political and teach how the sausage is made and the misuse of your taxpayer dollars by various characters. But these are the kind of conversations that why we really, really love local talk radio. For something that's so important and something that one day in the future will be forgotten by a lot of people. This day of days and the unbelievable amount of sacrifice to start dislodging the Nazi powers of their control of Europe. And we saw what the misery that the Nazi regime rained upon their fellow humans in that part of the world. It was also interesting. Rick was talking about the amount of uncle talking about German soldiers. There is a I think there are a variety of graves cemeteries in Normandy for the German troops too, because they said at that time of the war, they were really pulling up a lot of younger soldiers. And I think there's at least, I think there's one summary that has 22,000 German soldiers in northern France also. So, but again, it's just when you look back at what we're doing here and what all those folks did all those years ago, and listening to President Dum-Dum try to invoke Ukraine and stuff in relation to this is an absolute joke. It's a joke. Again, Freedom Season. Freedom Season. I want you to go. They're open today. Go to Hobby Lobby and go crazy on your patriotic decorations, lights, whatever you can do.
Amen.
And do the place up. Memorial Day we just had. D-Day today. Flag Day on the 14th. Then we have, of course, Juneteenth, when the Republicans freed the slaves from the Democrats. And then we have, of course, let's finish strong on 4th of July, Independence Day. And, you know, I know everyone's hiding in their house. It's warm. I get it. But you know something? Let's do it up. Let's freaking do it up. It's just the way it all fell, the way it's going. We're there. And then we have a Belmont Stakes on Saturday just to make it a little extra festive. So, Matt, your dad was a World War II vet, correct? Or was he Korean?
Right at the very end, yes.
Oh, World War II, okay.
And he was in the Philippines.
Okay.
That's where he served. And we lost him a couple of years ago. And he finished up high school early so he could enlist.
Interesting. How old was he when he enlisted, do you think? Was he 17?
17, I believe. I think he finished up a year early or a semester early. I can't remember which.
At that point, do you lie about your age to go into the Army, or were you allowed at 17?
I think with permission, I think you could. Anyway, And they moved him around to a couple of schools first because, he wanted to go a track. He wanted to be a navigator on an airplane.
Okay.
So they moved him around a couple schools, and just because of operational needs and this and that, he ended up, one of his jobs was he worked on P-51 Mustangs in the Philippines.
Wow.
And he talked about at the end when they were just pushing these boxes of airplanes, these crated airplanes, into a pit. And he says, this is just a travesty, is this a travesty? We did honor flight. This was a few years ago, 2019. And he had been to the World War II Memorial, but there was a new one that I wasn't even aware of. We went to the Air Force Memorial, which is stunning. It's so dramatic. It's got these three planes flying vertically and flying vertically on this humongous structure. And it's just beautiful.
Lovely.
And just, you make all these different stops and seeing people interact with their guardians, with family members. It was really special. And I highly recommend anybody who gets a chance. And to echo Michelle's call from earlier, ask questions. Ask questions and draw stories out in a way that's appropriate. Because just ask questions. And there's some amazing stories out there that, for whatever reason, they've either been suppressed or they think that their family isn't interested. And just some amazing stories out there, Chris.
All right, everyone. Thanks for everyone. Ted and Matt and everyone. Thanks for, and David Schweikert. But thanks for all the great calls. And thanks to all those men and women of the Allied Forces that made it happen 80 years ago. Wake up.